If I should start with introducing myself, I'm a journalist. In 1994, I was studying journalism. And I was... maybe a bit of a geek. And I had this very unusual habit that when my friends who were studying other items, other issues, they had written reports, etc. Then they gave me copies of their reports, and then I read them. And I read in 1994 a report that a friend of mine had made covering the Danish defense's infrastructure. He had measured every locality, every facility in the Danish defense system with the workforce and travel distances, etc. And he wrote a huge and very, very boring report on this issue. And on page 87, he'd written a little caveat. He wrote that he was not including all the Danish Defense Intelligence Services facilities because they were covered by secrecy, but that it was a known fact that the Danish Defense Intelligence Services had different facilities that were set up in cooperation in the SIGINT Pact, including several NATO countries. Point, new line, and no further information there. And I felt like, well, what's this? So I started digging in, and that was the only information I had at the time when I started this research, that the Danish Defense Intelligence Services were cooperating on intelligence, on signals intelligence through different facilities in Denmark. I'll get back to this process later, but first I'll have to describe some of the findings that we published. As you can see, it was very analog. This is a scrapbook that I luckily managed to find in my files that has been hidden away for several years. That was how we published our stories. This is one of the most important ones. This is an interview with this woman. She's one of the bravest women that I've ever talked with. Her name is Margaret Newsham. Peggy Newsham, and she was a whistleblower who back in the 80s described how NSA, the National Security Agency in the US, was coordinating this huge cooperation and intercepting communications worldwide, and that they were breaking the US laws in doing so. She was stationed in Menwood Hill, a base in the UK, where she at one time by an interpreter who was sitting next to her. He reached his headphones to her and said, "You should listen to this." And then she heard a voice in these headphones, and she was in the UK, and she could recognize this voice, and she said, "Who is this?" And the interpreter said, "This is Strom Thurmond." They were intercepting the US Congress at the time. And this, of course, pissed her off. Sorry for the foul language. So she decided to make an issue out of this, and she was one of the first significant intelligence whistleblowers. She reached out to Congress in the 80s, way before Snowden, and told them about this problem. And then she went under the radar. She was the source for a Scottish journalist named Duncan Campbell, who wrote articles in the UK about this Echelon interceptions network. She didn't stand forward at the time. She was an anonymous source for him, but she was one of his primary sources in his research. Digging into this story, we found out that Denmark was cooperating with the US intelligence networks. They were cooperating as a third-party member to the Yakuza Pact. Yakuza Pact was a network set up by the US and the UK, with additional cooperation with New Zealand and Canada and Australia. And Denmark was one of the third parties to this cooperation. At the time when we broke our stories, even the word Yakuza was still a secret. the Danish cooperation with the US intelligence services on Signet's intelligence was initiated in 1947, shortly after the Second World War, where the Danish intelligence services took over some of the German facilities in Denmark and expanded them and received new equipment and built up this signals intelligence facility on Amager, close to Copenhagen, at a place called Sanagård, or the farm, where they established a section of the intelligence service called Forsvaret Centralradio, the Defense Central Radio, that had the task of performing signals intelligence, which was not odd if you look at geography and can see where Denmark is placed in relation to the Soviet Union. You have this little odd thingy on top of Germany, and you also have Bornholm, where this arrangement was supposed to be, which was close to Poland, to East Germany, etc. It was very obvious that Denmark should be a place where you'd perform signals intelligence towards the Soviet Union. But Echelon, of course, was a different story. The Echelon system, which she was a programmer on, was a computer network with a dictionary system that was designed to collect data from different intercept systems and run it through these digital dictionaries for information that you'd fed into the dictionaries beforehand. So you'd look for different code words, etc. And whenever they came through on this intercepted communications, well, it would pop up. Maybe we should do questions on the way, if that would be interesting. There's one man nodding here. Yeah. So please interrupt me if you have questions. I think that would be better. We not only found out that Denmark was a third party to this interceptions pact, we also found out that in significant ways the intelligence community had affected how communications were established in Denmark and worldwide. We found how different encryption algorithms had been adjusted to facilitate interceptions. The GSM system, the algorithm in that system, not only was the algorithm changed so it would facilitate interceptions, but also the last 10 bits in the encryption key were set to zero. So you would have different ways into breaking into the GSM systems otherwise than tapping on the cables between. And this is, we found out, this is a pattern where when you work on affecting these systems, you'd go for a level of redundancy in access ways into this interception technology. We discovered that the monetary transaction systems were as a SWIFT, etc., were under surveillance. We found many connections between Denmark and between the Danish intelligence service and the U.S. intelligence service, both on the absurd levels and also on very significant levels. One of the absurd levels was that the first website set up by the Danish Defense Intelligence Services, it was located at San Antonio in Texas, very, very close to Fort Huachuca. This they changed when I asked them why. But we also found, and that was perhaps the most important part. Back in the 90s, there was a huge debacle worldwide concerning encryption, where the US was pushing very hard on different countries to change their encryption policies. In 1998, There was the Wassenaar Treaty that was set up, where you'd have some sort of export limitation on encryption. Until this agreement was made in, I think it was December 1998, well, then the official Danish policy was that we'd have and support free and strong encryption. But then overnight, this policy was changed December 3rd, 1998. And this came as a lightning out of a clear blue sky. When I contacted different politicians to ask what was this about, they hadn't even heard about this Wassenaar agreement, and they started asking questions in Parliament. Later, very, very much later, I found out that, and that's the little insert here, this little one. This whole change in the Danish policy towards encryption was guided by a Danish wish to remain within this, remain very closely within this intelligence cooperation as a third party. It was central for the Danish government to have this close relationship with the US. Back in 1998 and 1999, I asked for freedom of information on all different sorts of documents, including on encryption. And there were some documents that they wouldn't hand over to me. They were exempted for different reasons. And this part here is from one of these documents, which I later asked for again. That's a habit of mine. I went back to the old files in 2014 after Snowden had and asked for Freedom of Information Act into some of the old documents that I asked for before, and I got this one. And what you can see here is that this Danish policy towards encryption was decided on the basis of the Danish wish to remain in det gode selskab, the good company. Det gode selskab is in quotes down here. The purpose was to secure that Denmark could cooperate with the countries that we traditionally have a close security policy cooperation with, called the good company. That's the Danish name for this cooperation. We have since found out that we have the Five Eyes, we have the Nine Eyes, and Denmark is part of this Nine Eyes. That's another name for the same cooperation. Moving forward, yes, there's a question. Is there a mic somewhere? I couldn't hear it. I'm sorry. No.
I don't have a mic right now.
Oh. I'll just go down here then.
So in the past you say that the Americans were monitoring the SWIFT system.
Yes.
And but illegally. But in the meantime, the European Union are giving them the data. And they're doing totally like with the support of the European Union, more or less.
Well, what's your take on this? Are you like wondering, or you say, okay, that's like was like following?
At the time when we wrote the story on the SWIFT intercepts, we didn't know that that was going on at all. So we just disclosed that this was going on. I don't know if it was illegal or legal at the time. And I have certainly no idea where it is legally now, but I think that's beyond the frame of this. The SWIFT story was just one small part of the stories that we broke. We found very, very little official documentation that Echelon even existed. I think we had two pieces of paper that said Echelon on them. And one of these papers pointed to a base in Sugar Grove in Virginia, where there was allegedly an Echelon interception site. So we called this the officer that was in charge of that base, And he told us that, well, they intercepted whatever they could pick down from the air. And they had slideshows on their website showing that some of the targets were Amnesty International, Red Cross, hackers. So we asked him, of course, are these among your targets? And concerning Red Cross, he said, no, they are our customers. They get information from us to protect them, which Red Cross, of course, completely denied. We found not only one whistleblower to talk with, but several from the NSA and from the Canadian branch CSE. And one of our sources from Canada confirmed he was an analyst. He'd seen reports in his daily work in the CSE. He'd seen reports on Amnesty and on Greenpeace that was a very highly valued target for these intercepts. They were monitoring the ships and where they were going, the missions they were on, etc. One of the things that we faced with all the stories that we wrote was that it was absolutely impossible to get any confirmation from the Danish government on anything. They denied everything. They had no knowledge of a system of this sort, and Denmark didn't participate in any cooperations of this sort with the system under that name, etc. It was a social democratic government at the time with the Prime Minister Poul Nyrup Rasmussen, and the Defense Minister Jan Trøjborg, and the Minister of Justice Frank Jensen. One of the central figures in the Justice Department on this encryption policy changes was the current and now discharged chief of the Danish Defense Intelligence Services. He was a main character in designing the Danish encryption policies at the time. And since then he became boss at the Danish Intelligence Services. And these denials were quite peculiar in their construction. At one time, the Danish Prime Minister said, I have no reason now to... I need to be sure to translate correctly. He said, jeg har ikke grundlag for at tage stilling. I have no basis to make an opinion on these matters. And since then, we know that he said this 2 years after he, as Prime Minister, had signed the agreement concerning a cable tap that later has become quite a scandal in Denmark. He was significant. It was him and President Bill Clinton who signed this agreement in cooperation, setting up this Danish-U.S. Cooperation on a cable tap in or near Copenhagen. That has later been described as a golden egg for the National Security Agency. But we did not know that at this time. We knew that the Danish telecommunications companies. Mostly the company called Tele Danmark, was linked up to this intelligence community. They were owned by an American company called Ameritech that had a sniffer point somewhere on the cables. And this was confirmed to us by the security chief, Jørgen Bo Madsen, at Tele Danmark. He was aware of this sniffer point, but it was in the Ameritech part of the network, so he couldn't do anything about it. We also found out that all Danish public registries at the time were sold out to a company called Computer Science Corporation. Computer Science Corporation in 1998 bought a company called CSSI in the US, and CSSI was established by a former employee at National Security Agency called Bruce McIndoe. He had been the lead architect on the Echelon 2 software that was the next version of the Echelon system. Echelon was established from the late 70s on. It was, as I said, Margaret Newsham was one of the programmers on this system. It was established under a code number called P415 and the code name Echelon. As I said before, there was this dictionary system that was the central part of it, but you also had some automatic data processing equipment around the world that fed data into the system under different subsystems under different code names. There was Carboy, etc. There's a lot of systems that fed data into this dictionary. But in the late 90s, it was growing old. The original system was based on VAX 11780 computers, which was funny because when we started this series, Kina Seba and I, one of the first stories we wrote was a visit we made to this second site, Aulandshage, where we, instead of walking up to the main gate, walk around and crossed in from behind where there was no gates, so we could tour the area. And one of the things we found was that was some discarded old equipment that was placed outside a building for recycling. And there was some VAX 11780 computers lying there. One was with a tag where it said VAX red, another was VAX black. And later when we found Mark Newsham, she confirmed that when she built the Echelon, when she programmed on the Echelon system, it was built on these VAX systems with the codes red and black for different parts of the system. So it was very similar. You can't conclude anything from a pile of rubbish, of course, but it was similar. It didn't stand out to the facts that we found on the Echelon system from the US. We also found some papers. There's a code name on a Danish system was called Spinnaker, as in the front sail on a boat. And all these little tidbits of information we collected and wrote together in some 200 articles in the newspaper Ekstrabladet, and finally in a book, which was published 20 years ago. It was a challenge to see how these intelligence services responded to our stories. Margaret Newsham, she told us, at one time, she told me that her computer had been hacked, and all the emails, all the communications she had with Kenan, my colleague and I, had been deleted. Not her, not any other emails, but only the emails she had between these two journalists in Denmark and herself. At one time, she shipped some documents in two boxes. One box arrived. In one box, she had some private documents concerning her work career, and that arrived. And the other box was documents concerning Echelon, and it disappeared. In the box with the private documents, she had put in a little picture with a yellow frame of herself and her dog. And behind the picture, she had stuck in one Echelon document, and it had been pulled out. So it was... and when we broke the story, the interview with her, we were contacted by 60 Minutes in the US, who wanted to do a similar interview with her, and they flew her out to Menwith Hill to make the interview at the gates of this second site in the UK. When she was there, she took some photos with a little camera, and she mailed this film with the photos to Kenan in Copenhagen, and it never arrived. At one time, she was very sick. At one time, she was in hospital, and she had this huge German Shepherd dog, and she had to take care of this dog while she was in hospital. So it was in a dog kennel, and there was a break-in at that dog kennel, and it had been muffled overnight, this dog, and some of its claws on the front paws had been pulled out. So when the workers at the kennel came and saw it. There was blood all over in this box where the dog was. So that was a type of harassment that she had been through in her life after she stood out as a whistleblower. She was been following when in the car. She was been followed by a car with government plates whenever she left her home, etc. That's part of the story here. These echelon stories broke at a time when there was no public confirmation at all about this intelligence network, and several other media worked on the story. And it was disclosed on the way that there were some sites worldwide. You had Misawa in Japan. You had Yakima firing range on the US East West Coast. There was Sugar Grove in Virginia. There was Menwith Hill in the UK. You had Waihopai. There was several sites in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, etc. At some time, due to the pressure, there was this committee set up in the EU Parliament, the Intermediate Echelon Committee, that took out to investigate whether this intelligence system was used for industrial espionage. They made a report that was published on September 5, I believe, in 2001. So it fell through just a few days later. But they concluded that the system was being abused for industrial espionage by the US. And they also concluded that several countries served as third-party agreements to this interception agreement, including Denmark, of course. Notably, some months after 9/11, there was a report published in the US focusing on how did the intelligence services miss any signals leading up to this terror attack. And one of the conclusions was that they weren't looking for these terrorists, so they missed them, which somehow was could correlate to the research that we had made, because one of the things that we found during our research was pre-LinkedIn, so to speak, for intelligence officers working in the US intelligence community, which I downloaded in its entirety and started doing some I broke it out, broke it down on different qualifications, etc. If you looked at the current, at the time, signals intelligence analysts working in the US intelligence system, well, there were two times as many that spoke French that there were as spoke Russian. And Arabic was off the radar. There was a basis for this suspicion that the system was being abused and that the system was corrected, directed not at the targets that would be the public explanation for the system, but at other targets, including, as also our sources said, the EU. Countries in the EU was very high on this system's monitoring. Especially companies. There was a former CIA director, Woolsey, who said, well, of course we are monitoring your companies because you bribe all the time. That was the explanation that they gave. But anyway, that was what they were doing. They were looking for information that could be used commercially. And all these different parts of the private sector and of the commerce sector, etc., were interlinked in this setting up these signals intelligence systems. At one time, one of my colleagues from another Danish media visited the interception site in the northern part of Denmark called Skibsbylejren. It's somewhere up near Jørring, the absolute northern part of Denmark. There are some radomes being set up there. And this journalist walked into the site with a local politician who was pissed off about this system being built there. And while they were touring the area, some person came and said, "You're not allowed to be here." And he was an American and was working on setting up this system. And he was wearing a Commerce Department t-shirt. And she wrote the story and it broke it on Danish national radio. When the politicians at the time asked questions about this episode, well, he'd already left the country. That was the public explanation that the Minister of Justice gave in Parliament, that it was impossible to get any information from this man because he'd left the party. We wrote our stories and we had this debate in Denmark. There was a lot of questions asked in Parliament. There were some discussions in Parliament, but there were practically no answers given. We couldn't get any confirmation even that the Danish intelligence service was cooperating with the U.S. Intelligence services. They wouldn't state the names or anything, confirm any information, and which I believe is the standard practice, of course, until 9/11. A few days after 9/11, the Danish Defense Minister Jens Højgaard and the Minister of Justice Frank Jensen confirmed on national TV that, of course, the Danish intelligence services were cooperating with the U.S. intelligence services, because that's the only way to catch these bad guys. A lot of things happened since 9/11. It's been quite a ride. We took off with a discussion on privacy and how these systems, it's notably, you have a lot of SIGINT systems, and some of these SIGINT systems are targeted against military or government communications. But this echelon system was in particular designed to siphon through civilian communications through Intelsat systems. There was an issue here where we're moving out of the regular space for defense intelligence SIGINT collection and into the private realm. And that was a discussion that Kenan and I, we tried to lift. When you have, and this was at the time when Facebook didn't exist, where we were not by any standards as transparent individually as we are now, where you can find information on practically anybody, anywhere, anytime. That wasn't the standard at the time. But this system was interfering with ordinary people's private lives globally. Collecting communications and siphoning through it, going after keywords, and pointing out specific individuals that were of interest for the system. And one of these, an example of this, I actually also found in my files. This is a suspect list that was collected and distributed to the financial authorities globally after 9/11. That was a list of people that had been in some sort of communications or contact with the supposed terrorists from 9/11. And this list was mailed out to the financial authorities only a few days after 9/11. So they'd been really, really fast in collecting that information, where you can find the names, addresses, emails, telephone numbers of people of interest in researching this terror attack. This was accidentally leaked by the Finnish, I believe, financial authority that put it on their website for half an hour after they'd received it. And I downloaded a copy of it, which is that one. And there's also some similar Italian documents in the folder. And as you can see, there's a lot of names. These are names that have been picked up by the US intelligence system and been compiled in a list and transmitted worldwide. These are people of interest for the US intelligence community. And of course, Kenan and I, we called the names, called the phone numbers on this list and asked them, why are you on this list? And not a lot of them knew what they were doing there. So I think to me that stands as an issue where you can see that a lot of ordinary people can get involved unknowingly in this interception of communications and be linked in ways that are that might be very unpleasant, knowing what happened at Guantanamo, etc. Questions? No? No? There's one over there.
You talked about the consequences for your whistleblower, and she had a lot of problems. But how did you and the other journalists, did you encounter any kind of, let's say, hostile interest in you as persons from the Danish or American intelligence services?
Well, it's difficult to say. I had a website at the time, and I was monitoring my log files, and I could see that they were searching high and low for anything on me and Kenan. So they happened to come by my website all the time from the NSA, from Edward Hill, from CSC, CSE, etc., NCSC. We had a lot of intelligence services looking for us on the internet. And that was at the time where search engines were Alta Vista and Hotbot, etc. We're talking 20 years ago, so 20 plus years ago. We also had some pretty interesting visits with probable sources that came to our newspaper and presented different stories where it appeared to us that we were just fishing for information. We had an episode with the now dead Defense Minister Jan Trøjborg, where he practically said that Kenan and I, we were traitors to the country. And it was absolutely impossible to get any informations, any interviews, and confirmations, anything from these ministers. When we met them at the hallways at Christiansborg, the Danish parliament, they'd run away from us. Somehow I tend to end up in situations where these decision makers, they run. So we chased them, but to no avail. Is that? Yes. I'd like to do two things briefly. I'd like to update on this very, very quaint information. There's been some developments, especially here in Denmark. We had Snowden in 2013. Let me just insert a comment here. We wrote this book and it was published in 2002. It's not a very good book, but it's the book in Denmark, in Danish on Echelon. And it's available online because after some negotiations with the publishing house, I got the digital rights for the manuscript back. And I set it up as a project that I would like to make a version 2.0, really. And I did that in 2011 or 12, before Snowden. So I uploaded it to Smashwords, an online publisher, where you can find it today. It's in Danish, and it's you are allowed to buy it, but it's not necessary. You can get a free sample of 100% of the book, so you can just download it and read it from there. You can see that I updated the foreword, and that's how far I got. So it's the original manuscript with no changes, because then Snowden came, and Snowden leaked a lot of information on this intelligence system. And the the possible implications of having such a system, including the massive invasion of people's privacy. So it reiterated the debate that we'd had back in 1998 and the years from that. And that was a good thing. One of the documents that Snowden leaked, I actually have here. This is confirmation that there was an echelon site on Cyprus, that the US had set up an echelon site in UK facilities on Cyprus, and it's a code word list. These are the information that you're not allowed to give because they're top secret, and these are the information that you're not allowed to give because they are top secret compartment. SCI, secret compartment information, etc. But anyway, Snowden confirmed what the Danish Prime Minister wouldn't, that echelon was real. And we had a debate on these privacy invasions, and there were some responses to that. As we've known since 2 years ago, one of the responses was that the Danish Defense Intelligence Services set up an investigation within to see if what were the possible information that Snowden could leak about the Danish intelligence services. And there were also leaked some documents concerning a system called Rampart A, which was a cable tap. And these documents concerning Rampart A show that the US intelligence services got access to cables internationally. And this would typically happen in disguise of the CommInsat interception sites, which were, if you visit Skibsbylejren in the northern part of Jutland, you can see six radomes that are 30 meters high, these huge white balls in the otherwise very flat landscape. So they're very visible. People know they are there. So if you want to place secret communications intercept sites that go after the cables, it would be obvious to place them where you'd expect people from the intelligence services, because they are there already and they have these huge white radomes they're working with. And same thing goes for Rampart A, probably. Here in Denmark, located most likely at Aulandshage, the main headquarters, the Sanagård, that was established in 1947, and where you also have these radomes. Where I'm trying to get to is that there's been some information coming forward since 2001, where we stopped our research and our stories, confirming and elaborating on what we found. Mostly, of course, that the intercepts that were performed in Denmark were not only targeted at the satellite communications that they could pick up, but also the cables. If you go to Skibsbylejren, we found some documents, some construction rules in the area around the camp that showed some limitations on what you could build there. And if you use these limitations and check them up against a satellite map, well, you could practically identify the satellites that these systems were directed at. And these were radomes at with a diameter of, no, the dishes had a diameter of 23 meters, so they were CommInsat intercept systems, and they were directed at geostationary satellites located above the Central Americas, which leads back to a hypothesis that was not only aired by Snowden, but also by Duncan Campbell and Nikki Hager, the New Zealand journalist back in the 80s, that there's some sort of exchange of information between these intelligence services. When the US intelligence services by law is disallowed from intercepting the communications from the US citizens, well, they can cooperate with the Danish intelligence services that are not inhibited by such rules. And so if you export the equipment to the Danish intelligence services and set it up in the northern part of Jutland, well, you can just target it at the US communications and that the Danish do the intercepts. That is similar to some of the information we found out after Snowden, where you have this cable tap in Germany that was run by the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, targeting communications going in and out of Germany on their cables. And when you combine this with the Danish cable tap run by the Danish intelligence services, where you have communications going in and out of Denmark, well, you cover a lot of area. One of the things that we found out after the story about the Danish cable tap broke was that there has been intercepts of Angela Merkel's communications from this Danish cable tap. So you have the Danes intercepting the German communications, and you have Germans presumably intercepting the Danish communications, and all is transferred to the US, who get an access to all of it. And Yogo's our privacy. Hopefully we are back at this privacy discussion and can reopen that after this 20 years of global war on terrorism. I think we should go to questions if there are more.
Exactly. Do we have any? Yes.
I would know, where do you think is this is this going now? Do you think that Europe will more cooperate with the US and do more spying in cooperation with them?
That's a difficult question. If we go back to 1997 and here in Denmark, there were two fractions in the Danish government. On one side, you had the Commerce Department and the IT and Research, Ministry of IT and Research, and they were supporting supporting the spread of, and use of strong encryption. And then you had the Justice Department and the Defense Department, and they were supporting the inhibitions of this distribution of strong encryption. And there were some very heavy discussions going on between these two parties in the Danish government. And this was withheld from the public at the time. It was a secret discussion, but it was very, very intense. And of course, the Justice and the Defense Department won that discussion. And the outcome of the discussion was that Denmark decided to inhibit the distribution of strong encryption. I'll get to your point. But we also see, so it's not a clear-cut picture you get when you look at a single government and how they respond to these issues. There are different parties in the different departments in government, nationally, and presumably also EU-wide. And you also have this, well, 20 years old now, but you had this parliament report digging into these matters. That was very critical at the use of the use by the U.S. intelligence services of this access to communications, and I presume that if you made a similar report today and really dug into to the now accessible materials on these sorts of intercepts, you'd get a more detailed view, and it would be a more dramatic view, and obviously the response to this would be more critical. But then again, you'll never know, and some things may happen that often derails the discussion once again, as seen before, as seen each and every time the intelligence, let me put this in brackets, abuses of the system appears. Well, there's some discussion, and then something else happens. And here in Denmark, we had the scandal about Kaisergade. Where that's back in the 60s, where there was an interception site that was located in a basement near the Copenhagen University, where they in secrecy monitored embassies communications in Copenhagen. And this was disclosed because when they set up the site, they didn't plug in a toilet. So whenever these intelligence officers, they needed to pee, well, they went up in the yard behind the basement and peed. And this was discovered by students at the university. And this was a huge case in Denmark at the time. And where media were intercepted by police and prohibited from printing the stories, etc. And similarly, as these cases, they appear, and then we have the debate. And hopefully, whenever this debate starts, we can go down that path where we discuss the principal matters concerning privacy and access to these kinds of information. Because, and it seems absurd to have a privacy discussion when everybody is on social media and everybody has these personal tracking devices in their pockets. And you can always find data on anybody. It's out in the open right now. So there's a lot to roll back, but the discussion is still necessary, I think.
Thank you very much, and keep digging.